What is a hamburger? A hamburger is different from a beef burger, right? Because hams comes from pigs.
Yeah, that's not where the name comes from. It's Hamburg, the place.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it's nothing to do with hamburglers.
No.
Smashing Security, Episode 55, Uber, Net Neutrality, and Website Hacks, with Carol Terrio and Graham Cluley.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Smashing Security, Episode 55, for the 30th of November 2017. I'm Graham Cluley.
And I'm Carol Terrio.
And once again, we are going to dive into the murky waters of cybersecurity. But hey, Carol, in the last regular episode, we missed a big story, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, we did.
Uber's farcical data breach incident. 57 million account users found that they had been compromised by a hack. A hack which is said to have happened back in October 2016, but has only been made public a year later. Not because Uber didn't know about it,
but
because Uber covered it up.
I know, it's so shameful. I think you should just tell the story. Just give the highlights of how it actually happened from what you've pieced together so far, because it's just fascinating.
It seems that Uber found out October 2016 that they'd been hacked and these attackers had accessed a GitHub coding site used by some Uber engineers. They'd stolen credentials, which they grabbed from there to access an Amazon Web Services account where Uber had other information. And via that, the hackers were able to make off of all this information. So far, so normal for a data breach. Mm. But of course, this is Uber, which I don't know if you've ever travelled by Uber, but I found them.
I have.
Yeah, it's really convenient, right? It's a great app, and you think, wow, this is amazing. I'm in a taxi. Woohoo, working. But by all accounts, not that great a company in some ways.
Totally loved giving them my credit card details as well. Loved that bit.
in some ways, similar to Amazon, right? Where you get a fantastic service, but there are reports that maybe they're not a terrific company.
Reports. They've not stopped being in the news for the last, at least 6 months.
Well, here's the interesting thing. So they discovered this data breach had occurred. And it appears that Uber covered it up. Their security team, which was led at the time by Joe Sullivan.
Someone that we've had a few encounters with.
We've had a couple of run-ins with Joe
in our past. Yeah. Hi, Joe, if you're listening.
Well, I doubt it. When we've written about Facebook security issues, well, he moved on to Uber. And he was spearheading the company's response to the breach by giving the attackers $100,000 in the form of a bug bounty in order to keep the breach quiet and please don't do anything with the data.
It's shut the f*** money, right?
That's exactly right.
Right.
And they didn't inform anyone. Didn't inform the users, didn't inform the authorities who were already investigating Uber for a number of other reasons. And
no one will ever know.
Well, unfortunately, the new CEO who came in September this year just found out about it last week.
Yeah.
And kicked Joe and one of Joe's buddies out of Uber and said, you're no longer running security because we can't trust you. And said that this was reprehensible, which I think it was, quite frankly. I think it's not so much the paying of the hackers, because that does happen, of course. Hackers do try and extort money out of businesses, and sometimes it can be pragmatic, maybe, to pay the hackers. That's one whole debate. What I think is outrageous is not telling those users, not coming clean and saying we've had a security incident and trying to sweep it under the carpet.
It is quite cool that the new CEO has basically, you feel like she's lifted up a bit of furniture and found this hornet's nest.
I know their name is Dara, but I've got a feeling it's a chap. I'll just Google image and try and work it out. Oh, yes. Dara has got a beard.
Okay.
Yes, Dara is a man. Anyway.
So I'm going to say that again. So I think it's good that at least the new CEO has come in and, you know, however, opened a drawer and found this hornet's nest and is coming clean, even though it's going to hurt the reputation. It's not good for Uber as a company.
What reputation? Uber has got an appalling reputation as it is already. This is the only sensible course of action it can take, because if any more cans of worms like this are discovered, it's going to be the death of this. Well, would it, though? I wonder if, I mean, you know, I have to ask myself, would I not use Uber after this?
Yeah. This is the thing, right? You're going to say in your head, well, I've already have an account with Uber and they already have my credit card details and I'm going to trust they're doing everything right with that. So I'm just going to carry on using the service because it's so useful when I land at some airport in the middle of the night and there's no, you know.
And I think that's actually the case with most of the hacks we hear about. Everyone gets really upset for a week or two. But who actually closes their accounts? And convenience often wins over security, doesn't it? All right, well, after the break, we'll be looking at the stories which piqued our interest this week. So join us after that. Hello, and today's episode of Smashing Security is supported in part by NetSparker. They are the web application and security scanner that can automatically find security flaws in your website and fix them before hackers can exploit them. If you want to automatically check your web applications for cross-site scripting, SQL injection, and other vulnerabilities and coding errors that can leave you and your business exposed to malicious hackers, check out NetSparker. Try it out now by downloading the demo from www.netsparker.com/smashing. And thanks to NetSparker for supporting the show. And welcome back. And one of the stories which really caught my attention this week is a trendy buttered coffee company called Bulletproof.
A lot of people ask, why Bulletproof? Why did you come up with the name Bulletproof? Here's the real story. Bulletproof isn't about being physically bulletproof. Bulletproof is about being highly resilient. Who's bulletproof? Like Superman is bulletproof. That's what we all aspire to be, and that's actually what we have inside of us.
Have you ever had buttered coffee, Carol?
I think I have had it once, but I don't even actually remember what my impression was of it. So maybe I never have had it.
Well, Bulletproof claims to do wonders to your brain and help you lose weight.
Yeah, I've read about it. I've totally read about it. I just think this is all a pile of garbage, but yes.
It sounds awfully trendy and funky. And when you read up about it, the chap who founded the company, a guy called Dave Asprey, he claims to have spent 2 decades and over $1 million biohacking himself. I think a biological hack is basically going on a diet. But he claims that you can help. You can also similarly upgrade your brain. Like, he lifted his IQ by 20 points, he says, and lower your biological age and learn to sleep more efficiently by drinking his coffee.
Ah, blah, 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 blah. Snake oil.
Well,
perhaps.
In your humble opinion.
Potentially.
But not the opinion of the podcast. Well, Bulletproof, unfortunately, has suffered a security incident. They've been sending letters to some of their customers, and they say that they identified in the middle of last month that unauthorized computer code had been added to their website on the page which operates their checkout, where you buy all your beans and ingredients to buy this mega coffee.
Right, right.
And that means that the bad guys have got your bank card numbers,
yep,
your expiry dates, your security codes, your names, your postal addresses, and your email addresses. And this was going on from May the 20th to October the 19th.
Shut the front door. That's like, is that like 6 months?
5 months, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. Apart from one day, October the 14th, apparently, according to the letter, weren't being grabbed. Now, what on earth is that about? Is that because their website was down? I don't understand. But apparently, October the 14th, you're safe. The other days, you've got a problem. I can't begin to understand why that was.
Yeah.
But clearly, you know, something seriously and badly went wrong, although I could find no mention of this on Bulletproof's own website. So you have to wait until your letter comes through to tell you if you've got a problem with this or not. I thought that maybe what they've done is perhaps a little bit unwise, because clearly they've written their own checkout code, right? They've got their own routines on their website which are asking you for all of this information to be plugged in.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they did a pretty poor job. And that is particularly embarrassing for Dave Asprey, the CEO of Bulletproof. He says that we take security of our customers' personal information very seriously. Everyone has that ready in their clipboard to cut and paste in every time they have a breach.
Yeah.
And they're working hard to strengthen the website. But the embarrassment for Dave Asprey is he used to be a bit of a bigwig in the security industry. He used to be director of product management at Netscaler, which was later acquired by Citrix, VP at Bluecoat, and get this, vice president of cloud security for Trend Micro.
Eek. Eek.
So that's rather embarrassing, isn't it? And maybe he needs to drink some more buttered coffee to amp himself up in terms of writing some more secure website code and preventing bad guys from coming in.
You know, there's a lot of people out there with websites that they may hire a third party to create the website and make it as secure as they can at that stage, but then they don't maintain it. And they don't keep someone that knows their stuff. They just think, oh, I can update a plugin, or I can, you know, just do a few little things and things get out of date, or things can be broken like this and there's no one there to spot this stuff.
Yeah. And they really should probably have spotted that code had been changed on their website for that length of time, particularly on such a critical part of their website where it can't be. You know, compromise is basically disastrous, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they said they're going to reimburse affected customers for any reasonable documented costs if your bank refused to pay you back. And of course, they're full of regret and apologies for
you
this.
You have to go out now and change your credit card details, change your credit card number.
Well, yeah. I mean, normally your expiry date is a couple of years in advance, isn't it? So the bad guys have got a couple of years to take advantage of it. Unless you change your number, obviously, always makes sense. Keep a close eye on your credit card payments. Look for any unusual transactions. And wake up and smell the Java. Let's hope their website wasn't written with Java. That would be awful, wouldn't it? I mean, that would be even worse. So, Carole, we don't have a guest this week, so what's your story?
Well, over last weekend, this was Thanksgiving holiday in the US, the FCC decided to release, well, some would say sneak out, the final draft of its net neutrality proposal. This is the order to roll back the 2015 net neutrality protections that the Obama administration put in place. This rollback means that internet providers like Verizon and Comcast and AT&T will be able to block content. So this is like online services, apps, and websites. And they can also throttle internet services, basically artificially slowing speeds and fast-lane those that pay more. So, you know, imagine, for example, you snuggle down to binge some Netflix only to find that your ISP has made it unwatchable just by throttling the bandwidth.
Yeah.
In order to encourage you to move to a more expensive plan, for example. Or imagine you can't access Facebook or other internet services, or you only have a set number of hours each month.
So the scenario might be that when you buy your internet package, you would have to tick the box saying, oh yes, I'd like to be able to watch Netflix, or I'd like it to be speedier in some fashion, or give me access to these bits of the internet. Otherwise, you go for a cheap option where you sort of get a second-class internet.
That's what everyone is worrying about, exactly. But it goes worse than that. Imagine also maybe a sensitive political brouhaha is gaining steam, and the ISP decides to block information on the topic, or just provide you with a single, you know, point of view. So
The good news, Carole, is there are no political brouhahas
exactly
at the moment. Things have got really,
it's tickety-boo
really
out there. Smooth sailing.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, worse than that, okay, any state-level regulations that contradict the FCC's order, okay, the one that they have in proposal right now, would be preempted. So in other words, you can't rely on local legislation to protect you.
Oh.
So according to The Verge, there's only one rule left here, that ISPs have to publicly disclose when they're doing these things. So I guess some might say that on the plus side, you're always going to know when you're getting f***ed. I'm just trying to shock you a little bit. Wake you up, you know? Come on. I've sworn twice now. Now, the FCC gave the public just 3 weeks to send feedback before the vote's going to be put up and the final decision's going to be made. Now, the question is, why would the FCC reveal this over a holiday weekend? You know, they're probably hoping that Americans are too busy stuffing their faces with sweet potato and marshmallow and turkey and all the things that they eat.
What, all at the same time?
At exactly the same time.
Sweet potato with marshmallow and turkey.
No, not turkey. So sweet potato and marshmallow is definitely a dish.
Really?
Yes. I've also been fed something that was like horseradish and lime jello as a side dish to turkey. I'm not kidding. It's a challenge. I found it challenging on my palate. So basically, thinking people would be too distracted by their gorge fest to pay any heed to a boring net neutrality story. But boy, did they get it wrong.
They should have taken heed.
The internet scrambled into action. And as Slate puts it, if you're concerned about the fact that the internet could be a very different place in less than 2 months, now is a very good time to rabble rouse. So there's a few things going on right now. One is battleforthenet.com. We've talked about these guys before in an earlier podcast, but this is a site that's dedicated to saving net neutrality. And they've registered already 500,000 calls to Congress on this issue. And protests to oppose this draft are being organized outside Verizon stores across the country. And these are going to take place on December 7th. Free Press Action Fund has set up a Team Internet, hashtag Team Internet. There's a dozen new petitions to fight net neutrality on change.org. Reddit is just slammed with people calling for action. And Reddit is actually, there's a really good, I'm going to put this in the show notes. There's a really moving post actually by Reddit to the community. And it's a great read. So all these things are going on. So those people that want to get involved, there are things that you can do. What not to do, however, and this is based on a segment on Fox News. So some activists have been going to Ajit Pai's home in suburban Virginia with signs directed at his children.
And Ajit Pai is the chap at the FCC.
He's the chairman of the FCC.
Yes, right.
So these signs are saying things like, they will come to know the truth. Dad murdered democracy in cold blood. That's pretty harsh. So on this, I agree with Pi. Like, families should just remain out of it. Don't harass people at home. I think they should be completely left out of it. Now, the fact that Donald Trump appointed Ajit Pai to be FCC chairman and everyone refers to net neutrality as Obama's net neutrality seems to kind of have radically politicized this whole issue. And, you know, from an outside point of view, I really urge people to ignore the politics here. This is more about deregulating a service that many see as the backbone of everything, of innovation, of communication, of technology, a free and open internet. And I don't want it to wither and die. I don't want it to be censored.
It sounds like the kind of thing which could be good for big businesses and for the telecoms companies, because it's another way to screw more money out of you, but a bad thing for the typical individual, really, isn't it? I mean, it's just going to end up with the internet costing you more or you being a second-class citizen because you can't access certain sites or use certain web services.
Yes, or maybe you're offering a brand new service or you're a non-for-profit. Or your school, and if they don't have the cash in their back pocket to pay for that super slick highway. So I say, if you agree, you know, if you think net neutrality is a good thing, you should go and do something about it. And there's loads of links in the show notes here. But if you don't, I expect you have your own good reasons, and they're simply beyond me.
But I guess, our message is, just because our Lord and Savior Barack Obama thought net neutrality was a good idea, shouldn't mean that people who don't like Barack Obama think that net neutrality is a bad idea.
Can I just share a factoid with you?
Yes, please.
How did net neutrality start? It's always been called the Obama thing, but actually it first started under Michael Powell, who was a Republican appointed chairman at the FCC. Right. And what happened was in 2005, a small phone company based in North Carolina basically began preventing its subscribers from making phone calls using that internet application Vonage. Because Vonage was a competitor in the phone call market. This action was obviously anti-competitive. So consumers complained and the FCC promptly fined the company and forced it to stop blocking Vonage.
Crow, you are such a font of information.
A font of information.
Well, I think that's what you say, isn't it? Isn't it font? It's not.
It is. Fountain. It is.
Have I done well?
I was impressed with you knowing that word.
I don't mean font like Helvetica.
Calibri.
Tahoma.
Now, it's a very important time now because we're going to hear from our sponsors, aren't we?
Yay! Are you worried that your website might be the backdoor through which hackers can access your information and steal data? Well, if so, you'll be interested in our sponsor today. NetSparker is a web application security scanner. It can automatically find the flaws in your website security and fix them before hackers can exploit them. You can try it out right now. Download a demo from www.netsparker.com/smashing. On with the show. And welcome back to that bit of the show that we like to call Pick of the Week.
Pick of the Week.
Everyone in the show chooses something they like. Could be a funny story, a book they've read, a TV show, a movie, a record, an app, a website, a podcast, whatever you like. Doesn't have to be security related necessarily. And my pick of the week this week isn't security related.
Good, because it shouldn't be.
Right. It is instead handy, because you watch a lot of YouTube videos, right, Kroll?
Yeah, I've been known to peruse the YouTube.
Yeah. Right. Well, there are YouTube secret keyboard shortcuts. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you knew about these. So rather than grabbing your mouse, you can just quickly flick a finger and pause a video by pressing the K button.
Well, sorry, the space bar works to pause a video, you know?
Okay, yes, we use space as well, but listen. Fast forward with L, rewind with J, or you can watch frame by frame.
Ooh.
Forwards or backwards by pressing the dot or comma key.
Okay, yeah. That's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
Pretty funky stuff, so you can just move forward. You can mute or unmute by pressing M. You can turn captions on and off by pressing C. It's actually kind of handy.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat. So that is my pick of the week.
I'm surprised by your pick for the week. Because I was convinced you were going to talk about something else. Here, let me get the link for you. Okay, there you go. Click on that and tell me if you read about this. And then tell me why, if you have, why it's not interesting and why it wasn't your pick of the week.
Okay, so you have sent me a link about Tom Baker. Oh, I love Tom Baker. Tom Baker was the fourth Doctor Who back in the 70s. And the reason why Tom Baker's in the news this week, I don't like to talk too much about Doctor Who because this could become the Doctor Who podcast.
No, it will not. Over my dead body.
So in 1979, I think we may have mentioned it actually in a past show, there was a scrapped episode of Doctor Who. They half filmed it. It was called Sharda, written by Douglas Adams, and
stop
it was never
showing
completed.
Stop showing off.
It's just basic Doctor Who knowledge. And what the Beeb have done is they have released a version where they've animated the missing parts of the story. And right at the very end, apparently, spoilers, of the show, they have some live footage of Tom Baker, who's now about 83 years old, in his Doctor Who costume in the TARDIS. They actually filmed it on a grubby old videotape studio with the old console and everything. So it looks like the real thing. Him there with his shock of white hair now, of course, and he's got a few lines. And it's rather gorgeous and...
Oh, sorry, I fell asleep. Sorry.
Hey, you were the one who thought this should be my pick of the week.
Yeah, I didn't mean to have a second pick of the week.
Well, no, I'm not saying it's a week, but you were just pointing me at it. But yeah, I do love Tom Baker. I think he's mad as a box of frogs.
Two of you.
I've never actually been a fan of Sharda, to be honest. I don't think it's Doctor Who's finest.
I have no idea what you're even talking about. I just saw Tom Baker and Doctor Who in the headline, and that was it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was about as deep as that. So my pick of the week this week is an interview show and podcast called The Rubin Report. And specifically its most recent episode, which is on Bitcoin. So The Rubin Report, if you're unaware, is a political talk show that airs on YouTube and it's hosted by Dave Rubin. And it is actually also a podcast. That's where I first heard about it. And I've listened to a few shows and think it's quite a cool little podcast where Rubin interviews like some amazing person, like an author, an activist, a journalist, comedian, professors, actors, etc. The latest one is called Bitcoin, How Does It Work? The interviewee is a first investor in Bitcoin.com and Blockchain.com, his by name of Roger Ver. And it's a really good overview to help you understand the Bitcoin cryptocurrency's ins and outs. And it's about an hour long, and it's a really good show to keep in your back pocket over the holidays if your in-laws or someone starts asking you to explain what all this Bitcoin stuff is.
Yes, that's a great idea.
You can send them just the link to the YouTube, or if they're podcast listeners, you can send it to them.
Or you can pretend to be an expert yourself. You can listen to it and then hopefully pass on the wisdom. So what do you think of Bitcoin, Cry? Are you because Bitcoin prices, they've been zooming up.
$10,000 I read today.
It's astonishing.
Yeah. So early investors obviously are laughing all their way to the bank. So it's no surprise that this person, Roger Ver, is obviously going to be touting the joys of Bitcoin and blockchain, right?
Yeah.
Because he certainly has money to make out of it. But he makes a lot of good points. You know, listen, because they're all in the press about how much money is going to be made, you are going to be asked about it, right? So may as well have an easy answer to explain, because what if your parents want to start investing in it, right?
The Bitcoin bubble has got to burst soon, though, surely, hasn't it?
Loads of people are saying that. I don't know how anyone would predict one way or the other.
Just seems to be so.
But it hasn't been going. People have been saying that for about 5 years.
Right, right. You know what? We should do an episode sometime all about blockchain.
I agree. I think you said that a few episodes ago. I agree.
Yeah. My brother has been hassling me, saying, when are you going to talk about blockchain?
Does he really talk like that? Jeez, poor guy. I haven't seen him in a while, so.
Well, thank you very much, Carole, for that pick of the week. We've got a guest lined up for next week. So that's fun, isn't it? Yeah.
We have a special surprise for our year-end show, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Yep. No. Just saying. Just saying.
Yeah, we've got some surprises in store. So make sure that you subscribe to the podcast in Apple iTunes or your favourite podcast app, so that you don't miss any future episodes. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at Smashing Security without a G, and we're also on Facebook. Look for the Smashing Security group up there. And we've got swag as well. You can buy not just T-shirts, you can buy mugs, and you can buy cushions /
very
pillows.
Ginormous cushions you can buy, can't you, Graham?
Well,
and give them to your friend as a birthday present.
It's pretty cool, though, isn't it? I saw a photo of you and you seem to be enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Go to smashingsecurity.com/store. That just about wraps it up. All that remains is to say thank you for tuning in. If you know someone else who might like the show, please tell them about it. Until next time, cheerio. Bye-bye.
Later, guys. Goodbye.
I'm going to press stop.
Stage, I think George Bush is my Lord and Savior as well.
Which one? The one
I don't mind.
The one with the groping hands.
Compared to what's going on right now. Oh no! God, you can't say that. He was involved with the harassment stuff.
Yes, that's what's it.
I missed. I didn't. I was talking. I didn't hear you. Eek. Yeah, I don't want him. Yuck! Get your hands off me.
What's your favorite Dickens book, Crawl?